The last track on the album we've already heard as the single from 1967, All You Need Is Love. The soundtrack music written by George Martin was not done in the usual way, which is to take a score already complete and recorded and then do the animation to it, such as in Disney's Fantasia. George had to write the music as the producers made the film. It seemed a nightmarish task at first, but in the end, George completed the 55 minutes of music for the feature. Actually, the music on the album Yellow Submarine is not the same as the track in the film. It was recorded for the LP later, using the same orchestra. Here's one section called The Sea of Monsters, where the Yellow Submarine is sucked up along with the whole screen. The score proved very successful and earned George Martin loads of fan mail and commissions for other film scores. January of 1969 is not a happy time for the Beatles. They begin work on their ill-fated film, Let It Be, at Twickenham Studios. Paul thought that it was time for another tour or film, but the other Beatles had little enthusiasm for the project. John was especially apathetic. He was very involved with Yoko at the time and didn't really care what the group did. He just tagged along. John said it was a dreadful feeling in Twickenham, being filmed all the time. I just wanted them to go away. We'd be there at 8 in the morning. You couldn't make music at 8 in the morning in a strange place with people filming you and colored lights flashing. The best thing about the film Let It Be was that it was a fairly honest documentary of the way the Beatles worked and didn't work together at that period.
I know, if this one is like, should we play guitar all through Hey Jude? Well, I don't think we should.
Okay, well, I don't mind. I'll play, you know, whatever you want me to play. Or I won't play at all if you don't want me to play. No, whatever it is that will please you, I'll do it.
We could start hearing the tapes now.
It showed the rough spots and the scars, the differences of opinion, and the pressures involved in keeping the group together. But the greatest justification for the whole project comes at the end of the film, as the cameras document the last public performance of the Beatles as a group. It happened at noon on the 30th of January on the roof of the Apple Building at No. 3 Savile Row in the heart of London. Completely unannounced, the Beatles set up their equipment and begin to play to a shocked group of area workers. The producer of the film and head of Apple, Neil Aspinall, explains why they did it on the roof.
We did it on the roof here, and so we could set it up on the roof, and if it rained, then we could do it the next day or the next day, because there was no audience involved. The audience was going to be the people in the street, you know, because we put big speakers outside so they could all hear it and that, you know, and they just stopped.
While most people young and old loved it and jockeyed for better vantage points from which to see the event, several businessmen were affronted by the inconvenience to the working day. But there were few problems.
No complaints. There's a police station in Savile Row just 20 yards down the road, you know. And as soon as there was 1,000 people stuck outside here stopping all the traffic and things, you know, they automatically came and started sorting it out.
After that session, a few months passed which see a lot more activity out of the studio than in. On February 4th, it's announced that the Beatles have hired Eastman & Eastman, the New York lawyers and Paul's future in-laws, to act as counsel to the Apple Corporation. 4 days later, it's reported that Alan Klein has been appointed by the Beatles to look into their business affairs. John says, we trust him as much as we trust any businessman.
I wanted to find out first if he realized the position he was. He indicated it. He had made a public statement about the financial problems that Apple had. And it was based upon this statement that I realized that he was aware of what I had been aware of. And so I called him and asked him if I could help, as general and as broad as that.
He offered to put their financial fracas in order and bring in new revenue. He was to get 20% of all money collected by Apple. Paul McCartney neither liked nor trusted him and tried to bring in John Eastman, but John Lennon didn't like this smooth, successful New York lawyer and persuaded Ringo and George to sign Clinon. Rumors of an impending breakup start, and John comments on the stories.
Because there was a lot of tension around the Alan Klein coming in days and all that, you know, and the ATV thing going on, you know. The Beatles under a lot of pressure, and we had to be together all the time, fighting and arguing and listening to all these different business things. That business thing was like a heavy tour, you know.
On March 12th, Paul McCartney marries Linda Eastman in London. On the same day, the tireless police track down another master criminal. They raid George Harrison's home in Esher and charge George and Patty with possession of the dreaded marijuana. And while Ringo is off filming The Magic Christian with Peter Sellers, John and Yoko fly from Paris to Gibraltar on March 20th and unite in matrimony. On March 26th, John and Yoko go to the Amsterdam Hilton and begin their bed in for peace. John says, "Can you think of a better way to spend 7 days? It's the best idea we've had yet. We're doing a commercial for peace on the front page of the newspapers instead of a commercial for war."
First of all, we made people laugh, and that's good. You know, I mean, John and Yoko are like the wind. You can't see it, but when it passes, the trees bend. You know, and that's what we do. And they had a lot of results, apart from us getting a nice film out of it and probably an album. A lot of people wrote us and sent word, and people from the States, all around the world. And just instances like some guy wrote and said, "Now, because of your event in Amsterdam, I'm not joining the RAF, and I'm growing my hair." Now, all we were saying there, symbolically, instead of kicking a shop window in, say, do something like grow your hair for peace.
Well, it released the tension, first of all. You know, I'm sure many people had a good laugh out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's very important now, because there's very little laugh in the world, you know. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that we did something, we didn't preach or anything, you know. Yeah. We just did something, a very modest thing, actually, you know, saying, well, this is the way we did it, you know. But that just sort of is to try to stimulate people to find their own ways, you know. And they can say, well, we can do it better. And then that's great, you know. Mm-hmm. And all we're trying to do is to sort of say, let's have courage and do whatever we can do. Let's find our way to do it.
And make love a lot more is, it might be a cliche and it might be fashionable, but it's still true, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know they'll take me seriously. It takes some time to realise it, you know. And the first few days they were all saying, are you actually going to stay in bed for 7 days? Mm-hmm. What about coming to see the city, you know? And we said, no, we are going to stay in bed and this is what we're going to do. And in the end, they took us seriously. And we got all the light-hearted stuff over. And then by the end of it, we were talking to Pravda and Czechoslovakia through the press, you know, and very seriously, and it was taken seriously all right.
On March 28th, Mary Hopkin releases Goodbye, written and produced by Paul McCartney.